This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. In Detroit, silent guardians watch over the city. Many people never even notice them as they keep vigil. But one book exposes them, studies them, presents them, and explains them. This book is Guardians of Detroit, Architectural Sculpture in the Motor City. The author is Jeff Morrison, and I had a chance to speak with him earlier this year. So schools and churches and firehouses, municipal buildings, office buildings, Beaux-Arts, Gothic, Art Deco, statues of historic figures, mythical creatures, gargoyles, and grotesques of all kinds. I mean, there are so many sculpted images all over the city. When did you start noticing them?
Well, I had first taken some pictures about 10 or 15 years ago. I had actually gone to a dog show at Cobo Hall and walked past some of the buildings, and I thought they were pretty striking, and then came down one day with a friend of mine just to walk around and take some pictures. And then about fall of 2015, I was going through some old photos and came across those, and I thought, well, maybe I should try to do something with these.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did that appreciation evolve into, you know, I think I ought to do a book.
I had time on my hands. I had recently lost my job and was looking for a new job, hadn't found one, was organizing the photos and thought, well, if I can't find a job, I'll have to make my own job, and decided to start working on this project. And as I mentioned in the preface, I thought maybe I'd get 100 pages. I didn't have any idea how much there was. And as I got down there and started taking pictures of buildings I knew, I would find more buildings along the way.
And you were talking about starting out thinking you'd do the whole metro area, and you ended up just sticking to the city because
exactly.
There's so much there.
Exactly.
Before we get into details about the figures, you photographed a lot of these sculptures, and a lot of them were several floors up, such as the sculptures on Book Tower, 13 floors up. How did you get those shots?
Well, I'm using a high-resolution camera. It's like a 24-megapixel camera. And then I'm also using a 600-millimeter zoom lens. And I'll usually snap two or three shots at a time with the automatic shutter and hope that I got what I need. And I came back to buildings several times, different times a day. It's always a matter of what the light is like. And when you first go to a building, you take some pictures and then you think, well, I need to come back at this time or that time and try to get better light on this area.
All right, for the camera buffs, I got to ask, Canon, Nikon, something else?
Canon, 5D yeah. Mark III.
The griffin is an often used figure in all of these architectural styles. Why is that a favorite?
I'm not sure entirely. Griffins are guardians of treasure. The griffin is also the name of the first ship to sail across Lake Erie, one of the first commercial vessels on the lake. It was Robert de La Salle's ship. And I think that might be part of it. But you see it a lot on police stations, which it must just have been thought of as a symbol of Detroit.
I've never quite understood the faces that you see on churches of a certain period. What was the reason for some of these really ugly and grotesque faces and figures? Because I don't make a direct connection between them and Christianity.
There's a couple of things. The main thing is that, especially when you see the gargoyles, say on Trinity Episcopal Church, one of the first buildings featured in the book, you see the gargoyles and they extend out and they look like they're trying to get away from the building. So symbolically, they're showing evil spirits or demons that might want to come in. There's no place for them here. They don't like it here. They're leaving. Why would they try to get, you know, these other ones coming up, try to get in?
So I always thought of gargoyles as guardians, but in this case, they're not. They're the opposite of it. They're trying to get away from the building. We know a lot of the architects of Detroit. We don't know many of these sculptors. You did track down some of them. How much did you learn about them?
One of the things that I found really interesting about them was how interconnected they are. You start with like Julius Melchers, who's considered the father of architectural sculpture in Detroit, one of the city's first art teachers. He taught art to Albert Kahn, among others. And then you see the people that worked with him or learned from him, they taught others, and they're working on different buildings. And then you see others, like Thomas Wagner had students that worked under him and learned from him. And you see the interconnections all the way along.
You know, if you're only casually familiar with Detroit, a lot of people are going to think about the Guardian Building, and a lot of people love that building. What's your assessment of that building and its sculpted imagery? Because it's Art Deco and a little different than a lot of the other buildings in town.
Well, the Guardian Building is exciting because of its use of color, for one thing. The bricks on the building were specially formulated for that building, and it's the largest brick-clad building in the world even today. But the sculpture on it, I think it's exciting. It's Corrado Parducci's work. I have in the book a rendering from the architectural firm, and you can see the variation between what they talked about doing or what they wanted or proposed and what Corrado Parducci ended up doing. One of the ways he worked, and one of the reasons he was so prolific and worked on so many buildings in the Detroit area, was that the architects trusted him. Back in the old days, late 1800s, early 1900s, somebody at the architectural firm would do a very detailed scale drawing of the type of sculpture they wanted on the building, and it was up to a craftsman to follow that. And as things progressed, all the architects of the city had such faith in him that they would do rougher sketches and just let him finish it up. As a matter of fact, sometimes Kahn on his blueprints has just an indication and it says Parducci.
So he became a collaborator instead of just a contractor.
Exactly, exactly.
I want to talk about the Old County Building sculptures. They've always caught my attention. Can you talk about the symbolism of those sculptures on top of the building?
Well, you have the four sculptures at the very top of the tower that symbolize law and commerce, mechanics, I think, and can't remember what the last one is off of my head.
It's only one of hundreds of buildings you've been looking at.
But yeah. And they're very interesting. Then you have the larger ones at the base of the tower. And they're all interesting, one reason because of the technique, the way in which they were built. They're copper sheeting over an iron frame. And as a matter of fact, during World War II, the county treasurer proposed taking all these statues down off the building and melting them down for the war effort because he thought they were solid bronze.
Mm.
And there was a lot of uproar by preservationists, but when they found out that they were just copper over an iron frame and there wasn't that much material to be had, the statues were saved.
Yeah, I know of a lot of courthouses around the nation that lost their wrought iron fencing or things like that for the war effort at that time. In a lot of these sculptures, there's this kind of medieval atmosphere. Is this American architects trying to imitate the vintage of European buildings, or is there some other driving force behind that?
It's a little of both. When you look at Trinity Episcopal, that's very overtly designed to look like a 13th century church. Architects were sent to study Gothic churches in southern England and to bring back the best of those and sketches of the sculpture on those and to create something that looked like it was out of the 13th century. But then you get into some of the newer churches like the Cathedral of the Most Blessed Sacrament, and it's kind of a Gothic revival, and it has a Gothic feel to it, but with a more modern feel. So it's more neo-Gothic, new Gothic, and you see the overtones of Art Deco styling in this and a little more modern styling to it. And most of these architects and most of these sculptors, they studied in Europe. They went to Europe and toured Europe and learned from the buildings of Europe and then brought what they learned back here.
There are eagles and pelicans, owls and snakes, wolves and crows. Animal imagery is very common. Do these symbols have specific meanings or do they change over time?
They have specific meanings to their time. You mentioned the pelicans. That's one of the things that got me started because Metropolitan United Methodist is right along Woodward Avenue, and I would pass it, and there's a large pelican on a church. And I would look at that and wonder, why is there a pelican on a church? And it's actually a symbol of atonement. The ancient naturalists believed that a pelican would actually kill its young because the noise that they were making bothered him. But then 3 days later, he would tear open his breast and feed them with his own blood to bring them back to life. So that's a pretty obvious Christian symbol. Another one that's very interesting that you didn't mention is the goat that you see on Bankers Trust Company. You look at a goat by the door, and why is there a goat on a bank? What does that have to do with anything? And they're actually symbols of cautious financial dealings. And if you dream of a goat walking around a farmyard at night, that means that you're going to come into some money.
Well, I've never had that dream. That might explain a lot for me.
Yeah, I'd like to have that dream.
In the 1950s, 60s, 70s, a lot of facades covered up some of these sculptures, some of the relief work, and some of them were removed, just chiseled away or taken away. During this renaissance of Detroit, does restoration include these sculptures and reliefs?
Yeah, they're actually doing quite a good job of renewing these buildings. There seems to be a real commitment to historical preservation. That being said, there are some buildings that are going to be lost, and that's a shame, even though so many buildings are being restored, like the National Theater is scheduled to be torn down. But even then, it's kind of a good news, bad news thing. That's the oldest theater in
Detroit. A Kahn building, yeah.
Yeah, his only Kahn-designed theater. but they're going to save the front facade and use it as a gateway to a pedestrian park.
Well, I suppose that's something. I'd hate to see that thing completely disappear. It looks like it was once very beautiful. You mentioned how some of these figures have deteriorated badly, some because of using coal for heat caused acidity in the air and that ate away some of the stone. Some of it's just weathering. How much have we lost just due to that?
A lot. You look at the sculptures on Trinity Episcopal Church. They're mostly still there. Some are damaged. There's one of a wolf in priest's clothing, a symbol of the worldliness of the church and a warning against that. And the snout of the wolf is broken off, and that's kind of disappointing. And then on the book building, they had to replace the nude figures holding up the cornice. They had become so damaged that they couldn't be repaired. They had to be replaced with fiberglass figures, mm-hmm. fiberglass imitations, which, to be fair, 13 stories above ground, you're not going to know.
One of the most celebrated of Detroit's sculptures and carvings might be the Scott Fountain at Belle Isle. Why do you think it's so popular?
I think it's just a beautiful fountain, for one thing. It's just great to look at in the summer. They have the lights on it at night. There's a lot of stories about James Scott, how he was not a very popular guy.
That's what I understand. Yeah.
He left money to build the fountain on the condition that they build a statue of him. And there was a lot of debate about whether someone should be able to buy a memorial to themselves, especially someone that many people considered to be of low character.
We stopped seeing this kind of imagery being incorporated in much of the architecture in the last half of the 20th century and this century. What do you think of that?
I think it's a disappointment. I understand the movement. I understand the principles behind more modern architecture. But I think where that trend is being reversed, and I like to see it as a sports fan, is in sports stadiums, particularly Comerica Park. You know, all the Tigers as part of that. Or if you go to Toronto, their stadium, they have sculpture on the outside of it. And it's just nice to see that coming back.
I hate to ask this question, especially about a book that's this extensive, but do you have a favorite Detroit building or structure or image?
Well, when I was working on the book, people would ask me that question, and the answer was usually the next one, because I'd right. find a building and start shooting pictures and start doing research, and I would get very involved and into it. I think there's a couple. A Guardian building is an obvious choice, the Fisher, but I think the building that most epitomizes architectural sculpture for me and what I think of as architectural sculpture is Trinity Episcopal Church. The picture on the cover of the book is from that church. There's originally 172 sculptures planned to be on the outside of that building. They didn't quite get to that many for reasons that are explained in the book. And just when I think of architectural sculpture, I think of Gothic architecture, and I think of something like that.
The book is Guardians of Detroit, Architectural Sculpture and the Motor City. The book is rich in photos, details, and history. The author is Jeff Morrison. Congratulations. Nicely done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here today. I really appreciate it.